Thinking back to principles, the principle of the right to development and the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities in the context of Rio, there were some developed countries that actually didn't want those principles to be inscribed in the Rio Declaration at all, right? And you have, after the Rio Declaration is adopted, an interpretive statement issued by the United States basically saying that, you know, actually, no, we don't think that there's a right to development. And no, common but differentiated responsibilities doesn't really apply to us. That was in Rio in 1992, you know, where the most famous quote from Rio was perhaps George Bush's assertion that the American way of life, that the U.S. way of life, is not up for negotiation. Perhaps the most famous quote as we look back at Durban will be the quote of Todd Stern, where Todd Stern says, if equity is in, we're out, right? So I would say we need to, number one, look at how the Rio principles are under attack within the climate regime, and look at the need for, within the Rio Plus 20 context, of a strong reaffirmation of those principles. Let me switch gears a little bit. Let me bring agriculture at this point into the discussion. And I think there are three points that I would make about agriculture and climate change. One, agriculture is part of the problem. And this is, I mean, these are three points that everybody makes about agriculture and climate change. Agriculture is part of the problem. Agriculture can be part of the solution. And climate change poses a serious threat to agriculture. Agriculture is absolutely part of the problem, particularly emissions from industrial agriculture. Agricultural emissions account, direct emissions account for something like 13% of global greenhouse gas emissions. It's principally not carbon dioxide, it's nitrous oxide, it's methane, principally from industrial agricultural practices, in particular intensive fertilizer use, so production and use of synthetic fertilizers, and intensive livestock production. But agriculture is also indirectly a cause of climate change. Up to, so something like 17% of global emissions are related to indirect land use change, that is deforestation or other land use changes that result in the emission of carbon dioxide through cutting down of trees or whatever. And to look behind deforestation, we have to recognize that agriculture is a key driver of deforestation. This is something that will be on the agenda for parties to discuss this year within the climate context. A new report from the Union of Concerned Scientists labels, names some of the key culprits: cattle, timber and paper, oil palm, biofuels, as drivers of deforestation. I won't say a lot about consumption in this talk. I did mention Principle 8. I think Principle 8 of the Rio Declaration is something that needs to be reflected upon and needs to continue to be part of the conversation. Because if you think about drivers of deforestation, you can think about proximal drivers of deforestation. That is somebody in Brazil or Papua New Guinea chopping down a tree. Or you can think about the sort of ultimate reason for those drivers, and that is consumption of products using oil palm, consumption of sort of the products of biofuels, consumption of meat, right? That, in fact, consumption, if we look behind those drivers, consumption is the key driver of deforestation. Agriculture is a climate solution. I also won't go into this in much detail. It's something that I spend a lot of time actually working on, is agriculture as a solution. Agricultural practices, particularly organic practices, practices that involve incorporation of compost, manures, etc., into soils, can actually, agriculture can sequester carbon in soils. That sequestration is often volatile and temporary. It's not something to think that all of our solution to the climate problem lies in just putting a bunch more carbon in the soil in Africa, although that is the perspective of some organizations. there are a lot of benefits that go along with paying attention to agriculture as a solution, because as we increase soil health, as we put manures, compost in soils, develop agroforestry systems, we actually increase the water infiltration capacity of soils. We increase the water holding capacity of soils. We help contribute to more resilient systems in the face of climate change, which will have an impact on rainfall, variability, amounts, et cetera. And increasing soil health increases overall productivity. So, agriculture as a climate solution has to be part of the conversation. Unfortunately, a lot of the discourse in the climate negotiations is about agriculture as a market-based solution, that is, quantifying the carbon that you store in soils and mobilize resources for agriculture by creating market-related solutions. The final point that I would make about agriculture and climate, the impact of climate change on agriculture. This to me is, well, it's the point that causes me to lose the most sleep at night. And unfortunately, it's the part of the agriculture and climate change relationship that is least talked about within the climate negotiations. Talk a lot about agriculture as a problem, agriculture, the market potential of agriculture. The most visible impacts of climate change on agriculture we've seen, right? We saw in Texas this year, massive drought, extreme heat, causing loss of most of the cotton crop. The drought in the Horn of Africa, certainly linked with climate change. The drought a couple of years ago and high temperatures in Russia. Those are extreme events that people think about when they think about climate change and the impacts of increasing temperatures and drought with respect to agriculture. I would call attention to the fact that there are more insidious longer-term impacts on agriculture that we need to pay attention to. So last year in scientists from Stanford University published a paper they're doing modeling work, and they're looking at weather data, crop production data, yields over the last 30 years? 28 years, 1980 to 2008, which showed that already weather-related impacts on yields on globally on maize and wheat. Maize yield reductions globally of 3.8%, wheat 5.5% from the data that they were looking at. As temperatures slowly increase, you start in places to reach physiological limits of organisms. We've got physiological limits. We don't want to be in a 55 degree centigrade environment. Plants don't either. Pollen in particular dies at high temperatures, so high 30s into the 40s. Pollen will die if you have those extreme temperatures at the point of pollination, flowering. Similarly, grain development is affected by temperatures, photosynthetic efficiency, so the efficiency of photosynthetic enzymes. So as temperatures slowly rise, our yields will slowly fall. Slowly. Nothing extreme, nothing visual like when we're picturing what happened in Texas. So, for example, in the Midwest this year, I don't know if you follow corn yields. I tend to try to follow corn yields to sort of see what the next year looks like in terms of food availability. But we had a pretty steep decline in yields, which I expected, because as I was sometime earlier in the summer, I watched a pretty serious heat wave hit the Midwest and looked at and saw that heat wave was coinciding with pollination in key areas of corn production. So I anticipated that we'd have a reduction in corn yields. They're not high-profile events. They will take a toll on agricultural productivity. The Midwest is a place where, we still don't, we're not starting from high temperatures already, but when you're in places in the tropics already, the tropics and subtropics, where temperatures are already close to the maximum temperatures that plants like to live in, we will see those temperature extremes will have impacts sooner on crop yields. Similarly, in rain-fed systems, as temperatures increase, soil moisture doesn't stay around as long, right? The moisture in soils evaporates. So what you'll see in rain-fed systems as temperatures slowly increase is a slow shortening of the cropping season, right? Because you can, the crop, you need to have a certain number of days where you have a certain amount of moisture in the soil in order to bring a crop to harvest. And as the cropping season, as the length of time that the soil moisture is at adequate levels decreases, we're actually going to see a decrease in the ability of people to grow crops, right? So we'll see a reduction in the area of cropping.